Hey, welcome to The Interactive Journey. Come along with us as we share the stories of parents, children, and professionals navigating a challenging world of various diagnoses, life transitions, and being human.
I'm trying to do the intro for The Interactive Journey, but we have been talking for about 5 minutes.
So I've spent the rest of the afternoon with you, so whatever you want to talk about, this is great. I just wish someone could see me.
This is Rachel, one of your co-hosts for The Interactive Journey, along with...
Hi, it's Logan.
And Megan.
And we are here having a grand old time with Deb Freed. She is the founder of Adult Independent Services, based out of Atlanta County, where she assists families and caretakers of developmentally disabled plan for the future, amongst other things she will talk about today. She's also a mother of a young adult with developmental disabilities, which basically makes her an expert on advocacy, love, kindness, the system, navigating child study teams, etc. Thank you so much, Deb, for being here. You are live in the office looking beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here today. Hi, everyone.
Hi. Welcome. We're so excited to have you here. So before we really launch into what you're doing now, can you tell us a little bit about how did you get to this point? A little bit about the backstory, the history.
Yes, and there's so much history. You want to have children, right? So one day you wake up and you get pregnant, you have some children. You know, and then as children don't come out with a book of instructions, parents don't have a book of instructions either. And as your children grow, and unfortunately our oldest daughter, who's 25, her birthday's Christmas, was born and not developing as quickly and as on the charts they say as a healthy typical child would grow. And as she's gotten older and through the schools, you know, she had all those IEP programs and there was all the services that she needed, whether it was physical therapy or speech or occupational. And we just found that, you know, more and more diagnoses as she was getting older, from medical disabilities to intellectual and developmental disabilities. And mind you, she's the oldest of three. So it's also, as you mentioned, you're almost like the chief, the cook, the bottle washer, you know, the coach, the parent, the sister, whoever, for your children, as trying to raise your other children as well. And juggling everything can be definitely challenging. And that's really kind of, as the years went on, some of her illnesses and disabilities just became more challenging. And when you get to high school, the questions always come up are, you know, what's next? What's going to happen to my child when she leaves high school?
They call it a cliff.
Oh, when you fall off that cliff. Mm-hmm. And it is definitely the scariest thing to ever fall off, because you don't have a parachute. There's no net below you. There's no trampoline to bounce you back up. And you don't know what's going to happen. And the schools do great jobs, you know, with their programs to try and assist families for the next step. But as you're sitting there in all your meetings as the parent, did I pick my kid up from school? Do I have to get him a Tuesday? With the doctor's appointment to Wednesday? This has to happen Monday. Mrs. Free, did you hear what I said? I'm like, yeah, I gotcha. You know, and then you just realize you have all the time in the world to get your child prepared. And before you know it, you've gone through freshman year to the age of 21. And then you take that diploma and you age out of school and you graduate and the door gets slammed behind you. And you're standing outside, whether it's raining, sunny, windy, snowing, you turn around and there's nothing behind you except a closed door. And now you're panicking and you're scared because you really don't know what's going to happen. So you start to navigate the wonderful state of New Jersey's government agencies to find out what's available out there. You know, and 20 years ago, 15 years ago, even 10 years ago, some of the agencies were there, but a lot more agencies didn't exist at the time like they do today. Mm-hmm. Hence why I'm sitting here with you, which is wonderful. But 20, you know, 30 years ago, you know, there's a lot of things that didn't exist, and it's very scary. So that's one of the things. Once you realize that there can be life outside of high school and that one chapter closes, or, you know, one chapter ends, another one gets written, one door closes, there's another one you walk through, but finding out the key that fits that lock to open the door is the challenge. And that's why I started the company, because now today my daughter is living in a wonderful supervised apartment in Blackwood, and she has horseback riding therapy and music therapy and regular therapists. And she has, you know, friends and companions that brings her out. And she has a job now. She's got a job coach, and she goes to parties and she goes to gatherings. And she really says she doesn't have much time to, you know, to see us sometimes because she's very busy in her life. But for me, that brings joy to see her smile, because she's living her best life as independently as possibly as she can. So it's the wonderful, it's so scary sitting in that high school room in an IEP program with 10, 12 eyes staring at you, to Mom, you can't come up Sunday for brunch because I'm busy. You know, I have to do something with my friends. So, and that to me is why I started this company. And that's why I'm here today advocating, contracting with schools, working privately with families, and making sure that these families know that it's okay to be scared. It's okay to ask those questions, what's going to happen next, but also that there is another chapter. There is another door to walk through, knowing that your children are going to be okay and that they can be independently living as best that they can be.
How uncommon it is, like I very, very rarely hear that either whether the individual, him or herself, says it or the family say that they're living their best life. Most of the time what we hear is, I just hope that they'll be okay. I just don't want them to get hurt. I want to make sure that their basic needs are being cared for and that they're safe. Safe is a big word that we hear. And I'm sure that you feel all those things too, but that quality of life is so important, and choosing the right place can be very hard. And sometimes there isn't a choice, you know, depending on your situation, there really isn't as many choices, but if there is a choice, how to select the correct place. So I think that's really amazing to hear that she's living her best life. If you could go back to those times, you know, 14 is when we start talking about transition planning, you know, at 14-year-old, I think I have a 14-year-old now. So to think what will be happening at 21, I can't even fathom being able to do that. Because what you were describing is that caught up in the day to day, maybe week to week, month to month, but you're in the right now. So to predict what you're going to need then is really hard.
Right.
And without too much of a guide as to what that's going to look like.
Right.
I think about that with schools. You know, they know what it's like in the school system, and they hear about different services that are out there, and they can kind of refer you to that, but they aren't even always necessarily experts. And every school district's different. There are some that are amazing and some that definitely leave a lot to be desired just for whatever reason. What would you do differently, or what are some questions that you wish you had asked back then or paid more attention to?
I think I wish I would have known me back then. Because when you're coming in, not so much in elementary school or middle school, because you just feel like you have all the time in the world.
Right.
And the schools were pretty good by pulling your kids out for reading and English. And, you know, and you're still trying to do, there's still community soccer or recreational things that your kids can take part in or things to do. But it's really entering your freshman year in high school, and you sit at that meeting and you're trying to get things together. But I think I wish I would have known me by saying to me the most important thing, because my husband calls me a hoarder. I hoard everything, especially when it comes to paperwork. Like I have drawings from my kids when they were like, you know, in elementary school, and their name isn't on it and their picture's not on it. They just have a squiggle line. Right. And my husband said, which kid drew this? And I was like, I don't know. He's like, seriously? Okay. Do we have to hang on to this?
Right.
But yes. As far as, right.
I'm the same way.
But then again, but I don't even know what kid I drew it, because now I have three.
Right.
So at this point.
So you just ask them.
Right.
Like, they'll remember.
That's what it is. But if I have families I do work with that I said, you know, the most important thing entering freshman year in high school is what you can do today is save every piece of documentation from every medical office professional that you've been to, because everybody comes out with an office summary from your visit, to every IEP program, to every note, to every test that was done, to every exam that you had, to every assessment, because those are the papers that you're going to need down the line when trying to establish what adult services that your child may need once they graduate or she graduates or ages out of school. So because I did hoard a lot of these things that I didn't need to hoard, but I hoarded some of the correct things, I had it, and it's in chronological order because you're going to need every piece of this paper. So as incoming freshmen come around and they start entering school, that's my number one advice to them is you save. Because from freshman year to the age of 21, even to 18, that's 4 to 6 to 7 IEP programs for, you know, three times. It's 21, you know, pieces of documentation just from schools that you can keep. And that's the things I start doing. And there's some other programs that you can use for kids as well that I try and share things with. But my goal is right now is I'm working with some families who are approaching the age of 18 and 19 and 20 who need power of attorney or guardianship and things like that, because as we know, in 18 in this country, you're legally an adult. Right. In certain areas that parents are no longer to take part in unless a child gives consent.
Right.
Whether it's a doctor's office visit, they're there and the child says, you know, I don't want my mom in the room. Guess what? You don't go in the room.
Right.
Yep. You know, so these are things to keep in mind, even documentation such as a state ID or a voter registration card, because once you're applying for adult services without proof of residency, you can't even apply.
Right.
So these are things I wish that was told to me as my kid was entering school, because these are the little tidbits of information that when you're in an IEP program, may or may not have been said, but because things go in one ear and out the other so frequently, because it's overwhelming sitting in these meetings, you only have a few a year. And right now you're worried about, my kid just got picked on in school. Right. You know, why does my kid have a D in this class when everything should be modified, you know, or they should be pulled out for English? These are the things you're fighting today
right.
while you're sitting in the school, because, or my kid needs speech 3 times a week, you know, not twice a week. So you're fighting for that. So you're going to your meetings every year, year after year, you know, demanding it or requesting certain things that you need today.
Right. So you're battling a war almost on two fronts. You have yes. the immediate one that you're that battle, and then you have the battle that's yet to come.
Right.
To make sure you're prepared for that. How far in advance do you feel that a family member or their parents should seek guardianship?
Well, technically you can seek guardianship really when you're 18, because that's really when you're really, unless they're depending on their disability or and how disabled somebody is. If somebody is completely, you know, non-communicative, you know, non-functioning, very, very atypical, you know.
Really high support needs, yeah.
Very high support needs. But if you have somebody, and that's the way every case is individualized. Mm-hmm. So depending on if someone is higher functioning, like I have some families who have, you know, I have some clients who the kids are, they think they want to drive, but, you know, they probably... they're going to go through the process of a class because it's offered at school, particularly in the child study teams now, which is great. Probably will never drive, but that's right. okay. Mm-hmm. But they want to feel included.
Right.
And that's the main thing. You know, so for a higher functioning child to be able to even attempt to do that, it's really the age of 18. Because right. that's where you legally become an adult, and that's where things start to change, and they need, that's very important to have a supportive decision maker on your side, or have one assigned to you, or become a guardianship or a power of attorney.
A lot of our families that we work with whose children do have higher support needs, they start almost close to a year beforehand because they didn't realize how much documentation. And I know that you have supported people that I know with finding that documentation to support why they wouldn't be able to be their own guardian, even though they, you know, if you were to try to have a conversation, they're unable to do that. Right. Unable to communicate. So it does make anybody looking may or talking, experiencing time with that person may say, of course, they can't be their own guardian at this point, unfortunately. But to legally go through it, it can take time and paperwork, right? Because it's not just go in front of a judge and the judge talks to them and it's a done deal, right? Right. There's more involved.
There's definitely more involved, which is why you go either to the circuit office or there's an attorney that I work with that definitely helps. There's a lot of people in my network that really helps with families, especially if they're in a time crunch as well. We need this documentation done. But really, it's the most important thing is what I say in the beginning. Documentation, documentation, documentation. Verbiage, paperwork, whatever it is, you start saving now.
Right.
Because for guardianship is challenging because it's not you who determines if you have to be a guardianship or a power of attorney or a supportive decision maker. It's going to be, like you said, the judge. But you need outside medical resources to fill out the paperwork and documenting that your child is incapacitated. Because when you compare, when you become someone's guardian, you are literally stripping away that individual's rights. 100% of them. And some of them definitely need a parent right. or somebody to be established a guardian because they are lower functioning and they need that support.
Yes.
But there are some individuals who I've come across who have tried to get guardianship and were not approved for it.
Right.
Because his child are higher functioning and they can make some decisions and they're more of a power of attorney that's needed or even a supported decision maker that's needed versus a guardian. So it is on a case-by-case basis. So if someone is truly lower functioning, I hate to, you know, and more disabled, yeah. then definitely start. But most importantly, keep the paperwork. The paperwork is your documentation. Okay.
So, but that's something you might be able to help them, pointing them in the right direction sure. with is, you know, this is someone who is obviously does not have that many needs,
right?
But may need that power of attorney or what have you. So you would point them in the right
Absolutely.
Direction on how to do that. Okay, I gotcha.
Yes. So
and
I've,
same
I
thing
clients,
with those who have more support needs. You yes. also would help them with through the whole process.
Yes, because okay. I've had clients come down who was in a very big pinch. Child was actually 20 and never had power of attorney or anything done.
Okay.
And wanted to apply for some services and needed also a psychological evaluation done. So in one day we had a psychological evaluation done and power of attorney done.
Wow, that's
great.
So
it's wonderful because so it's there are people that, you know, that I do work very closely with that we are work together and to really help and do what's best for the families and get done what they need to get done as quickly as they need it.
Okay. So in addition to guardianship, that's just like a drop in the bucket of all the different things that you can do. Right. Talk about those who do need some, possibly may need some type of residential placement or support. How can you help families with that?
Well, the number one thing for the agency that's really has been amazing, but I call it the red tape. There's so much red tape that you have to cut through when it comes to these agencies. I'm sure you all know that. Why would anything be easy?
Right.
You know, why would you have to fill out one piece of paper like this, you know, that's mm-hmm. a single page where you're just like, okay, great. And they just hand you something over because right. that would just be unheard of.
Yes.
Maybe you could write that. Sorry. why would anything be easy? So number one thing, residential. I have many clients who sometimes feel that their loved ones will live with them forever.
Okay.
And I think it's a wonderful, wonderful thought, but sometimes we have to think about that. I wish I was bionic or titanium or everlasting mm-hmm. and live forever, but we don't. Right. So I guess I try and share with them the number one thing is really after being 18, get these paperwork done, become the power of attorney or the guardian or the supported decision maker. Make sure we start applying for Medicaid and disability, Social Security. Because the way the Department of the Developmental Disability works is they work on Medicaid waivers.
Okay.
So there are two waivers that DDD works on, the supportive program waiver and the community care waiver. So usually residential services come out of your community care waiver.
Okay.
So that's the residential part of it. And the wonderful thing is that DDD is a wonderful agency that covers, you know, all of these things. And some of your Social Security money does go for your rent, a certain percent, just by law, it has to do that. That's the way the state of New Jersey works. But that's what it is. But it's the paperwork. So my challenge is with the families is while they're still in high school, not only to do your day-to-day worries, that you're, you know, but to fight the challenge, your future challenge.
Right.
So it's the paperwork. And then once you get approved for DDD, then we work through there and how you answer their assessments that need to be answered. And making sure that we request the certain waiver because there was a wait list for some of the residential programs.
And sometimes it's years long.
Sometimes it can be years long.
Yes.
Sometimes it doesn't have to be years long.
Right.
So it depends on, as I mentioned, everything's individualized. Every client is different. Every family is different. Every situation is different. So depending on the situation of that client, sometimes people can be placed a lot sooner than others. So, but the most important goal is paperwork, save everything, fill out your applications early, making sure so that even DDD wishes, you know, you age out of school at 21, you should be able to slide right into your adult state funded services. And yes, there's many, many different available other agencies that can help you and be part of and help you, you know, go along the way in transitioning to adulthood. But it's all paperwork. And mostly it's making sure that everything is correctly filled out with the correct documentation that you need.
Yeah, and the verbiage is so important. How you write certain parts of those applications can make the difference between whether or not you get services.
Right.
When really you're communicating the same thing, it's just how it's stated,
And if that one I isn't dotted or one T isn't crossed,
right.
or they don't think it's crossed because the T's line's going into another letter, they send it back.
Right.
And to remember is that a DDD application, if it's not filled out correctly or they're requesting additional documentation, and sometimes families are busy and people work, maybe it's a single parent or whatever the situation may be, but if that application sits for more than 12 months, it gets scrapped and the whole thing needs to be started over again.
Right.
And that's another challenge because starting over from day one, and that means they don't take what you had already given them. You have to start over.
Right. From like you never did anything before.
Right. And it is a 26-page application.
Yes. It's long.
So it's about 5-6 pages of writing, but it's all 26 pages of reading because you have to sign on certain lines and allow certain things or even just put your initials on something.
Right.
And that's just that application versus your Social Security and your disability for Medicaid. That application is another, you know, plus millions of pages. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like that's something you can help people with, too, is to differentiate the different types of applications or information that they would need, what would be appropriate for their child.
Right.
Yeah, because I think that's really important. Not everybody, I mean, there's some those are some pretty basic definitely apply for, but there's some others out there that may or may not be appropriate based upon the individual.
Right.
What about somebody who may have some more support needs but decide to not pursue residential? They're at home. How can you help them?
Right. So part of their funding through DDD, they can have, you know, a directed supported person come to the house. They can have, and if they don't have DDD, there's wonderful other agencies out there who can help with families as well. Hence where I'm sitting. Window Interactive Kids is wonderful. Mm-hmm. You know, but the great thing is about is having your agency. It's wonderful. DBRS, Jewish Family Services. You know, there's a lot of, which is nice today because there's so many different areas that people can turn to. The challenging part is, you know, the schools don't sit there. Some of them do, some of them don't, like we mentioned. And some of them don't even know about all the services because their job is just to get you through school and hopefully prepare the best they can for the future. But that's where I'm becoming such a needed service for the schools, and that's why I'm contracting with the high schools right now because they're seeing such a great value with my services being extremely an added benefit to really help these families prepare because these are the areas that is overwhelming for the families. So whether they need someone coming to the house, which is wonderful, and there's a lot of sources, even JFS, there's companions that people can come. Someone can take you out for 4 or 5 hours a day, teach you life skills, maybe even go to dinner, how to pay for a movie, how to work an ATM card. These are all the skills, depending on, like we said, every case is different, that can be taught through any types of services that are available. But the question is you can't access really a lot of these services without having an appropriate documentation or the appropriate application done. Even here, you can't just walk in and I can't say, hi, I'm here, give me something.
Right.
There's steps that you need to be evaluated even here.
Yes.
You know, to find out, and every case is different. And, you know, every service is, you have to be evaluated for.
Right, because you have to make sure it's the right fit, no matter what, whatever it is.
No matter what it is.
Right, because we don't want to, you know, any agency wouldn't want to take someone on that they couldn't meet their needs and make that promise that they're going to help them if they aren't able to.
Right. Yeah. And it'd be wonderful. You could just press a button, you know, or make a phone call. And like, as I mentioned, I was on the phone with a connection for DDD because I speak to them pretty much daily. But it's wonderful. But, you know, without Medicaid, you can't apply for DDD. So, and I was thinking, I was like, wouldn't it be great if DDD and Medicaid kind of came together under one office?
Right.
So like, it would be so easy for all of us to walk in and be like, okay. Because that would, you know, that would be wonderful,
right?
You know, if the state of any state would just make these services so readily available and easy for everybody that needed them, because you know that would just be, you know, unheard of for that to happen,
right? Like,
yeah. You know, because it's so challenging, and most families don't have time to sit and do all this because they're too busy juggling all of their responsibilities, roof over their head, food on the table, you know, and making sure their kids have clothes on their backs. While you're sitting here trying to fill out 26 pages of applications, making phone calls to agencies like this and other agencies, and then you have this one that needs to go to soccer practice, this one needs this, or this one's got a procedure coming up. I mean, I'm like rambling, but that's how it goes on in a mother or father's head or a caretaker's head or a guardian, because that's how we think.
Right.
We think about, oh my God, my kid just got her shirt, your shirt's ugly. Oh my God, I'm homeschooled, your kid just said my shirt's ugly, you know. I'm worried about today. Like, does my kid just want to go to school today? Because guess what? Her best friend said her shirt's ugly. You know, I don't know what's going to happen in the future. And the questions of schools, where do you see your kid in 5 years? My answer used to be alive. Right. I want my kid alive in 5 years. Now, I don't know what the future is going to hold. I don't know how many more obstacles that we have to go through or how many hoops I got to jump through, how many potholes I'm going to have to go over. I can't answer that question today.
Right, but they're asking you that question because that's on their paper, just because I, you know, you've seen it, I've seen it, the paper of what it says. Wouldn't it be better to help parents by having some kind of guide with that? What does that even mean? Where do you see your child in 5 years?
What's possible for your child in 5 years?
Give them some multiple choice or something, like some guidance with that.
Right.
You know what? We're going to be talking about transition at our meeting, at our IEP meeting tomorrow or next week or whatever. Here. I'm going to ask you this question, but these are some of the things that I'm thinking of. Are you seeing your child as entering college or a vocational program, maybe residential if that would be appropriate, at home with you doing some type of hands-on work? Like, give a lot of examples, a sheltered workshop. I mean, there's so many different things that could be out there. Hopefully, you know, out there working at some point. I mean, I'd love to see my kids working some, you know, more than just their summer jobs, right? If someone would ask me post high school, where would I like to see my kids? I'd like to see them in some type of training program or college, if that's appropriate for them, so that they can have an independent career. I think that's the interesting part, is that we all want independence for our children, regardless of what type of needs they have to get them there. And independence for every person is different. You know, right. So the level of independence might be for some individuals that they have someone working right beside them to help support them. That's as independent as they can be right now. And that is amazing. But as a parent, I'm like, what am I doing? I don't know. What am I doing next week? But
let what am I doing today? Right. Mm-hmm. And I think most importantly for a child with special needs and being a mother of one is that they want self-worth. They want their life to have value. They want to do something. And as they're sitting in their bedrooms watching their siblings' lives move on, they're getting their license, they're applying to schools, they're going on dates, they're getting asked out, they're going shopping with their friends. And my daughter sat in her room playing on a cell phone, going on downloading sites that I couldn't, that I was had to keep blocking because I don't even know where they're coming from, what they heard of, or, you know.
Right.
And it's depressing. It's depressing as a child with special needs. And even if someone is lower communicative or lower functioning and not and more atypical than another child, they still get depressed. Yeah. They still feel things. They may not be able to communicate to you, but it's there. Yeah. And it's challenging. And all they want to do is feel that they have their life has meaning, that their life has value and independence, but value. They want to know, like, my daughter has a job. She works 4 hours a week. She has a job coach. She goes in. She makes pizza boxes. She puts little stickers on stuff. She's got a job coach that sits there. They go over it. Sometimes she's only there for an hour and a half, depending on how many bags she has. And they gave her employee of the month.
Oh,
you know, because she put the best stickers on the bags. And, you know, and she got her first paycheck. And I was crying because I was like, my daughter got her first paycheck. But she's more, Mommy, I got employee of the month. Yeah. And they put her name on a little plaque. Because, you know what, she works really hard and she's really excited. And she was so happy. Like, she had meaning. Right. She had value. You know, no matter what it is, that's the most important thing that a teacher cannot teach you. A director can't teach you. A superintendent can't teach you. A director of a child study team can't teach you. A case manager or a social worker. Unless you are a parent of somebody who is developmentally or intellectually disabled. And that's why I feel that parents should be part of this. So the school does IEP programs for the children for what their day-to-day is going to be, what classes they're going to do, how many times a week they're going to get therapy, what day they're going to get pulled out for English or math, whatever services they need. And my service is for the family. My service is for the caregiver, the guardian, the parent, the power of attorney, to make sure that they're on track for that future, for their future. Right. Because if the kid is living, their child's living their best life, then guess what? We can live our best life.
Right.
You know, if they're being as independent as they can be and getting the services they needed and having someone else step in and bringing them to the doctor's office visits or having them get transported from, you know, plan A to plan B, whatever that is, I can do stuff. Mm-hmm. I could be with my other children or I could go on vacation, you know. So it really is an overall experience for everybody, that everybody needs to be part of it, because you can't do one without the other. It has to be in a working motion together.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting. Like, I can make a broad statement that many districts, I won't say all of them, because it's not all of them. There are some that take the time. But the services that you're talking about, guardianship, that next step post-school, a lot of them don't necessarily really want to get involved in that. Especially if they do, they want to be peripherally involved and not very heavily involved. Right. And that's where the families need that hand-holding to take the next step. So you're educating them. And maybe they'll at some point do some of the things that you do. But I don't ever see them. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Prove them wrong, school districts. But I don't ever see them, at least in the foreseeable future.
Well, that's why they're contracting.
Right. But taking that, sometimes we've been contracted and then they start doing it themselves. And I'm okay, because there's always more that I can do for you. It's the same thing. You may have them take on some things, but then there's another family they'll add to your caseload and another family. Right. And, you know, I think that would be great, because that's only going to increase the partnership that you will have with those school district professionals and with the families, and really make, because that's why we're here, is absolutely to make that connection.
Right.
For us, we say we're doing it to work ourselves out of a job, because a lot of times we're working with problematic behaviors in schools. So we want to have to be there for long. We want them to be successful, because unfortunately there's always somebody afterwards.
And that's with the schools. They're right. Like revolving doors. And I understand that as one class is graduating or aging out, another class is coming in.
Right.
So, and that's what it's, so, you know, in 20 years from now, your teacher's not calling you up and saying, how are your kids doing?
Right.
Did they graduate college? Do they have a job? Where are they living? Are they still at home? You know, like they've had 20 classes after you at this point, and they'll have 20 before. I mean, it's a revolving door, which is why, you know, it's very challenging for schools to do that. Also being a parent that has lived through it. A lot of times I would sit in the school as a parent, and I just feel it's like this. Mrs. Freed, did you make sure you called this 800 number? You know, because this is the...
Here's a paper, here's a script, and I'm reading from it.
This is the service that you handle that does maybe some vocational training. I'm like, oh, thanks, you know, and like... Yeah. I am a hoarder, so I'll take this paper home with me. Don't get me wrong. It might be in the pile that you drew the colors, pictures, you know, or maybe it was in your pile because I couldn't remember who drew the dot, dot, dot of, I don't know, Pac-Man, you know, but, you know, and then it goes down and I'm like, oh my God, I was like, what was this for again? You know, even though I know I was told, you know, right. The school tried to help me by giving me the correct information for a correct agency, but they don't know what they're talking about in my head because I'm a parent, you know, they don't know how to walk in my shoes, just like I'll never walk in yours, but they can't sit there and tell me, you know, and sometimes families, parents, caregivers, we go through a very myriad of emotions, right? Like you get angry, yes. You get sad, you get depressed, you just want to, and there are days I would sit outside of my garage and I'd go outside and I'd be on the phone with a hospital or a doctor getting a report back from a test that maybe was bad or maybe was good. And I'd sit there and people used to laugh at me and I'd be like, who can I hit today? I just want to hit somebody because I'm really mad. And I'd go through my list. Well, my husband, I kind of like him today, so I don't want to hit him. You know, my children, of course, I love them. So they're out because, you know, that's a bust. So I'm like, all right, well, that person down the street, I don't really like her today. Maybe I could use him. You know, you go through your list because you just want to get this out. And you're like, people are like, go to the gym. I'm like, Jim, what am I, drop a weight on my foot? You know, like, I just want to hit somebody. Like, right, you know, you just... You know, and then you go through your list. Who can I hit? You know, of course, there's no one that you come up with. You know?
Good.
So then you
get. I'm glad you didn't.
You hit a pillow,
and that brings us to why Deb's here today.
You hit a pillow. Yes. You know, you scream out. You scream into a pillow. You go through all your coping mechanisms. What can I do? You listen to music. You're just like, no, I just want to hit somebody. You know.
Yeah.
But you know, when you can't find anybody, then you're like, all right, never mind. Okay. And then you just expel all your energy because you're sitting, going through a list in your head. By the time you hit the bottom of the list, you're tired because you went through all of it. So you're like, but you know, but those are the emotions. And like, no one will, whether if you have a sick kid or not a sick kid, or even if your kid has, you know, scrapes her knee and blood's everywhere, and you're like, oh my God, I got to get a band-aid. Oh my God, what if they get an infection? You know, it's emotional, you know, because you just want to be like, I'll take care of it. Oh my God, why didn't I scrape my knee? Why do they have to scrape their knee? Like, you'll take the scrape for your kid because we do anything for our children, you know? So it is, it's definitely overwhelming. And, you know, like I mentioned, I wish I knew me 6 or 7 years ago, but I, you know, and I'm glad that I'm here today.
Right.
You know, and I'm glad that I'm here with all of you, but yeah, everything's just, it's definitely a challenge.
Well, tell us a little bit, like, what can neurotypical or the parents of neurotypical children learn from you and from others who have had a different journey with kids who have some type, or, you know, now adults, have had some challenges, whether it's because they have an intellectual disability or physical or what have you. Like, what advice would you like to give to the other parents out there?
My first thing is that, find a support group, even on Facebook or somewhere online. Initially, my daughter was diagnosed with a very rare autoimmune disease. She's got a very rare chromosomal abnormality. She's only about 1 of 11 in the world that has it.
Wow.
So I used to travel all over the country into Canada getting support. So what I would first say, you know, it's very scary thinking you're all alone.
Yes.
So that would be the number one, my advice would be is, you know, call me, call you, call somebody where you have somebody who has some experience or someone that can share some of your challenges that you're already facing. The next thing, as I mentioned, just keep a hold of all of your paperwork, making sure that you keep everything in chronological order, because no matter what your disability or is, what your medical disability is, there are services for everybody. There are groups for everybody. I have been working a lot with other outside nonprofit organizations where we do groups. I'm trying to do things once a month. I think I mentioned to you, we did an open gym one night. We have a dance coming up, I mentioned to you.
Right.
So, but keep participating. Making, you know, keeping sure that you have an open mind, making sure that, you know, you are connecting with people who have similar circumstances, or even not, just parents that you can relate to.
Right.
These are just very important things because it'll help later on make your loved one be more successful at being either living independently or whether it be a job coach or something to make them, you know, it'll make that, whatever you can do to make that your child happier and give that child's life a sense of self-worth or value, it will inevitably make you feel better knowing that you're doing something that you can help your child. Because once that's done, and it's really challenging, it's a tough tough road. It's a very tough path. And not to give up. Don't ever give up, because there's always somebody out there that can pull you through.
That's interesting, because one of our previous guests wrote a book, and it was called Don't Give Up, is the beginning of it, the Stan Adams story. And it really was quite inspirational, his journey all through his life with autism. And now he's a young adult. I still consider him young. he's a young adult who had such success with swimming and found a community with swimming, and just how that really shaped his life. But you look at that parent, Karen, and how she didn't give up. And, I see that same kind of spirit in you as well. What about your friends or people who have neurotypical children or no children? How do you help them to understand or relate, or what can they do to help you or to help others that they're friends with? Because I'll give you an example. I have a lot of friends, but I have two friends. One has a child with autism, one has a child with Down syndrome. And I feel like the three of us really connected for a variety of reasons, but the fact that I work in this field, and they weren't seeking services or anything like that, but I had some kind of understanding. And then both of their experiences, their children are about the same age. So they have that connection with one another, and the three of us became close because we could share those and the successes and the trials and the tribulations that others may have had more challenges understanding.
So it's challenging. One is because you do what you do, and it's wonderful, and I thank you for what you do, because we need you guys, you know. Without your organization, you know, it's helpful, whether it's therapy or just coming in to talk and helping someone transition and getting them prepared. It's like we were lost without your organization. So, and you understand some of the things we go through, because that's why we're here, you know. And it's wonderful. Not all of people that you're friends with understand or can relate to the challenges that families face. So I will tell you, some of them remain really good friends. And it's wonderful. Sometimes we don't share everything with all of our good friends and even our best friends, because sometimes I feel that we talk a lot. I talk a lot, and there's always a challenge on it every day. Every day there's something that comes up, because it's just, we are living with this forever.
Yes.
It's, you know, just because someone leaves high school or graduates or leaves, their disability doesn't go away. They're just going on to the next chapter.
Right.
You know, so sometimes they feel that, you know, everyone's like, how's everything going? And I'm like, everything's great. Thank you. You know, because sometimes it's overwhelming. So all of your friends are very supportive, but I don't think they always understand. I also feel that sometimes, and what was just one of the things that's very heartbreaking to me, is that unless a loved one physically shows a disability, it's very challenging for people to understand and to accept someone that is disabled if you can't visualize it, if it's not external.
Oh, yeah. They look fine. I've heard that so many times. Well, they look fine, and it's not all external.
So that is one of the biggest, because my daughter, Lindsay, for one, even though she was extremely very thin and she has severe brittle bone disease and stuff like that. So she was always hurt and always had a cast because she's broken almost every bone. But, you know, could have been like someone in an accident on a bike, or could have been tripped off, you know. But she didn't have the external features of someone that was developmentally or we can't really say intellectual, but developmentally disabled. So she wasn't invited to a lot of parties. She wasn't included in a lot of things. And it's depressing. You know, then you feel like you see areas where people are you can physically and visually see their disability, and they're prom queen or prom king, and they're included in a lot of outside recreational activities, and it's wonderful that happens. At the same token, you feel it's not fair. It's not fair, and there's a lot of things in life that aren't fair that we have to live with and move on and grow.
Yeah, how do you do that? Like, how do you get past?
You find someone to punch.
Going on?
Like, right.
Seriously, because I think about
you
that.
You go down your list. Who can I cut? That's why you have a list.
Because I look at that, and I've thought about putting myself, particularly since I know the story so intimately, my two friends, putting myself in their shoes and thinking, how would I not feel like this isn't fair? I didn't do anything wrong. Like, I ate all the right things. I did all the things I should have. I took my vitamins when I was pregnant. You know, I didn't live in a home that has lead or anything. Like, you know, there's so many things that people suspect can relate to some type of challenges later on. I did everything right. And it doesn't mean that there's any lack of love or change for love for your child. Right. But it's, why did this, why? What? Just the why. Why do you want to know that?
Right.
It's similar to, I hate to say, but similar to like someone, but different to a parent whose child unfortunately commits suicide. The why. Why did that happen? I don't understand why that happened. And trying to piece together to figure out something that you may never be able to figure out.
And that's the challenging part too, because you can't go back. You can't. Right. You know, you can ask questions, but no one's going to answer the questions. And the other juggle is, or I should say the other challenge is, when you have typical children with atypical children,
right?
It's the balancing act. And then some of the children on the typical side feel slated, uh-huh. you know, and they feel that, you know, there's a lot of guilt in there that get thrown your way because you don't have the time or you missed something or you spent more time on Tuesday with this one than you did with this one because they're not realizing that you're sitting in hospital. They were doing some services or whatever that is. So it's really becomes, it is a very, very delicate balancing act for everything. You're asking why, they're asking why, you know, and they're going to be getting older and they're like, you know, would you have me? You had me what to baby? And you're like, I didn't have, you know, another child to babysit this one when mom and dad are gone. Right. No, I had more children because I wanted a bigger family.
Right.
So these are the things I also try to share with my clients as well who have multiple children is the importance of getting all this paperwork done early because you didn't have more children to make sure they take care of your sick one, right? You had more children because you also wanted a bigger family, right?
Right.
So you don't want to have to make sure that responsibility lands on your other children.
Right.
Because there are families who don't have any of this done and felt like their child was going to live with them forever. And I have a family, a client who we helped at the age of 50 get on, you know, services, you know, because parents are feeling they're getting ill in their 70s, you know. Right. So it is definitely, there's so many other variables into play, which is why we talk about the schools. The schools may try and duplicate some of this, but they'll never understand everything because they'll never walk in someone else's shoes. And they can try and say, make sure, you know, you get your state ID done at this age and make sure you have a voter registration card. Okay, that's great. No, thanks. Yes. You know, I appreciate it. Does that mean every door is going to be unlocked for me because I have a state ID or a voter registration card? Does that mean I can walk in here and the red carpet's going to be rolled out for me and you're going to come over and say, great, what can we do for you today? Right. Like, no, but, you know, these are just stepping stones. And, you know, and every day there's another stepping stone that may come up depending on your situation or depending on your child or depending on what your needs are going to be. You know, and that's why it is an extremely overwhelming process.
Right, because it's constant effort that is above what parent effort, like for a more typical child. So it's constant effort that you have to put out that's extra. You have to attend these IEP meetings. You have to make sure starting young, get that initial assessment. You have to have somebody come into your house when you have a little one, 0 to 3, come into your house and provide therapy in your space and be okay with that.
Right.
And you have to also sometimes participate in that throughout the time. Somebody who has I guess that's why I always looked at like when I had friends who had littler kids and they're like, oh, they're so annoying. They won't stop talking. I can't say that I never thought of that to them. There have been times I'm like, oh my gosh, if you would just stop talking for a couple minutes, because it never. And then, but I always jump right back to, but then what about all the people who have kids who can't talk and never will, like verbally speak or communicate? Right. And everything is so much bigger and you're fighting for your whole entire life. There's something else that you're fighting for. Right. And it is exhausting.
I just want to be able to go to the bathroom just for 1 second.
Oh, yes.
Right. That's all I wanted.
Yeah.
Because no one wanted me.
Right.
Or talk to me when I was sitting in the family room with you while I was asking you questions, wanting you to talk to
me.
And then the second I got up just to go to use the ladies' room, everybody followed me in. I'm like, wait, 2 minutes ago. Like
you couldn't care less about like, me.
I'm like, I'll talk to you to the door, but can you get out?
Yes. I remember when I got my first shower, consistently getting first showers without somebody coming barging in or somebody in a bouncy seat or something like that.
Isn't
it
wonderful when you get to take a shower?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Especially when you think that you're going to be on video for a podcast and you come here and they tell you that you're not. Deb looks gorgeous today. Her makeup is impeccable and her hair is perfect. I love it.
Freshly showered.
Well, Deb, this has been so much fun talking to you. Honestly, we keep going for like another hour. I'm serious. We really could. But, you know,
we'll just have to catch that on our next barista's chat.
Yes. Barista's coffee shop in Linwood, and we're talking about maybe having like walk-in podcast.
Come in and talk to us. We should do that.
Yes. All right. We'll put that on our list. If you like that idea, you can reach out to us because then that might mean we would do it quicker if we actually hear that people are thinking of that. But if you want to hear more from Deb, spend some time with her. Honestly, just having a conversation. She offers you a free 30-minute, right? Correct?
Yep.
Tell me if we're on free 30-minute consultation to start out to see, are you guys a good fit for each other? Do you have the need, does she have the abilities to meet the needs that you're looking for, or maybe she would refer out. But honestly, if you're of that teenage, later teen years into adulthood, she's who you want to talk to help you navigate the system here in New Jersey. But even if you're not in New Jersey, she's pretty darn resourceful and can help you no matter where you are. So before we do anything else, we want to hop over to Logan with Logan's Top 10.
Rapid fire questions. So I'm just going to ask you these questions. You answer them as quickly as you can with whatever comes to your brain.
I feel like I'm on a game show.
These aren't trivia, so they're just basically, they're based off you. All right. A four-letter word that starts with D.
A four-letter word? My God, I'm thinking dog. Can we start over? Dare.
Dare. Favorite store?
TJ Maxx.
A tool you never leave home without?
My phone.
Most common answer.
Yes, it is. Stay in or go out?
50-50. Go out tonight. Sorry.
Right now.
Go I'm to showered.
Showered. Showered.
I'm going out tonight. Tomorrow night, stay in. Tonight, we're going out.
Your go-to lazy dinner for tomorrow, of course.
Chicken. Baked chicken.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Your favorite hobby?
Jewelry making.
Favorite pizza topping?
Cheese.
Favorite rainy day activity?
Watching a movie.
And your life motto?
Don't ever give up.
I love it. So awesome. Before you go, tell us a little bit about how someone can find you and any commercial that you might, if you have anything coming up that you'd want to share. So a little bit about how they can find you and then anything else you'd like to share with us.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for having me again. I love it. I wish we could have all day because this has been such a wonderful place to come in and chat with you guys. I've had so much fun, even though I showered. You know, thank you so much. But it's funny because I don't have my office number memorized, so they can reach me on my cell number, which is 954-541-7765. I know it's a Florida area code, but I do live in New Jersey.
Say it again, just to be sure.
It's 954-541-7765, or they can reach me at deborah.freed@adultindependentservices.com. My website is Adult Independent Services, so they can reach me that way. The other thing I just wanted to share, if that's okay, anybody would like to share this information with their schools or case managers, their social workers, superintendents, child studies team directors, because my goal really is to work with the high schools as well as, you know, any family that needs any information or has any questions or help in really preparing for that process from transitioning from student to adult life. I'm here for them.
Wonderful. Thanks for coming.
Thank you so much for having us. I loved it. Thank you. I really enjoyed being here. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Looking for more? Be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast app and Instagram at The Interactive Journey. Questions, comments, or want to be a guest on our show? We'd love to hear from you. You can message us at podcast@interactivekids.com or on Instagram at The Interactive Journey.